Calcio Land Podcast with David Amoyal.
Benvenuti, as we would say in Italy. Welcome to all of you that don't speak Italian. Thank you so much for joining us for the Friday episode of the Calcio Land Podcast. So today we're going to react a little bit to what we saw in the Champions League. I will tie it in a little bit to Serie A. There were certainly quite a few former Serie A players linked into that. Then we'll get into speaking of Champions League. For who would it be more catastrophic to not make the Champions League next season between Juve and Milan? I want to thank Thousand Names for getting me the game picks really quickly today. I forgot to ask him. Great job by him. So we'll have game picks from him as well. We'll have a special part of the podcast for our patrons. And been a while since we took a deep dive on Atalanta, so I'm excited to have Mark Doyle available for all at the end of the show. We talked 90% about Atalanta, a little bit about Serie A there. So I think you'll enjoy that at the end to get you to the weekend. But, you know, there's been a lot of talk on Pirlo. There were some reports he might even be gone this week. It sounds like he'll probably finish the season. But one call that I was very wrong on was on him coming back as Juve manager. I thought that a few months ago. Now I'd be really surprised no matter how things end. So I want to ask you this. We saw Chelsea, Alex, doing so well. My friend Napoli Outsider a month ago told me he thought Chelsea were the third best team in Europe. So I'm asking you this not to bash Lampard. It's really not. It's really more I want to ask you, what has been the biggest difference when you see Tuchel at Chelsea? Because I think Juve fans are thinking there might be a similar impact with a more experienced manager. So if you had to put your finger on one thing that you think is different, what would it be and why?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I'll try and make it specific. I think the easy answer is tactics. I think we all know Tuchel is a much better tactician than Lampard, but also Tuchel is a much better tactician than managers, unlike Lampard, who have actually been in the game for a long time. Like, there could be a manager who's decent, who's been in the game for a while, who still isn't great tactically. They're just decent overall as a manager. Maybe they're a decent man manager. Maybe they have just a really good plan A, but they're actually not that great tactically beyond that. I don't care who it is. Tuchel is high-end on the tactical side, so especially compared to Lampard, because Lampard definitely, as much as I liked him as a manager, his biggest strong suit was still being a man manager and probably giving off a vibe and an aura to his team. However, David, here's where my specific answer is. Even though Lampard probably had that vibe and aura going for him the most when he took over, first of all, I think that was majorly hit once fans were not allowed in the stadium anymore, because Lampard is kind of that guy who really would be lifted by the fans, as would his team. That really happened at Derby County in the championship. It kind of overcompensates sometimes for less than tactics. But specifically, because it was so obvious that Lampard wasn't amazing tactically, I actually think once that vibe and aura was really wearing off, especially in empty stadiums, I actually think players picked up on the fact that, oh, you know what? He's not really that prepared for all of these different type of opponents. Maybe he knows the answers, but I think players, David, could actually smell the indecision on Lampard. I think Lampard, it was pretty obvious whether you're a big fan of him or not. Sometimes he overthought it. He changed it too much. Sometimes he overthought it by being really stubborn and not changing it at all. And I think after a while, players picked up on that. And if you feel that your manager is a little unsure and maybe a little out of their depth tactically as well, well, then you will just naturally are going to lose some confidence in yourself, in the rest of your team, and in your manager, which is not good. So I think after a while, even though Frank comes off as a really confident person, come on, we're talking about professional footballers who have had coaches previously to Frank, obviously. They're going to know where this guy has it and where he doesn't. And I think players started to pick up on the fact that, oof, he's not really prepared for all these types of situations. He wants to be, but he's not. And Tuchel? Huh. The players know. He has an answer for any style opponent, any injury that then could change maybe how this team is actually going to play. yes, he has his formation, but he has his beliefs a lot more deep-rooted, and he can change formation because he has always been about similar words. Like, he's always about intensity and high ball recoveries, but he knows how to tailor probably his style, which could be specific. He knows how to tailor it to the group of players he has. He's very confident in his plans, in his tactics. So he instills confidence throughout the whole entire squad. So my specific answer is, it was just clear, based on the fact that Tuchel is really advanced tactically anyway, but it was just clear Tuchel came in and he instilled confidence in the players for themselves, but also the players looked at him and were like, okay, this guy knows what he's doing. He's prepared. He's prepared for a heavy end of the season here against top oppositions. He's got us in terms of making us totally tactically prepared. And probably he gave them emotional confidence as well. And with Lampard, it was just kind of obvious. Ooh, when the wheels were starting to get a bit wobbly, the players could tell, uh-oh, he hasn't really been here before. So maybe you could just wrap that up in experience, David. I mean, players are not dummies. Once again, Jorginho spoke about it, I think, a week and a half ago, that they know that he may have skipped some steps, Lampard, to get that job. So it could apply for more managers than just Lampard, maybe Pirlo as well. So yeah, I would say the players smelled Lampard's inexperience and maybe lack of tactical ability. And with Tuchel, it's just the opposite. So yeah, that would be my answer.
Well said. I think Juve fans are going to get a lot of hope from that. So I have to say one more thing, Alex, I want to ask you about. I really enjoyed watching these Champions League games yesterday. Roma, maybe a little bit less. You know, I noticed a lot of older, familiar faces. Man, Cavani put on a show yesterday. I was like, man, if that guy was in Serie A, I'd score 25 still right now. But on your team, there are three guys that are doing really quite well. I have, you know, I'm a big Jorginho guy. Thiago Silva's been excellent. I'm a little bit surprised of Rudiger having kind of this role on Chelsea. So tell me a little bit about these three former Serie A players. Which of these guys' contributions has surprised you the most in a good way in this Champions League run, if you had to pick one?
Yeah, Rudiger, for sure. Because Thiago Silva, obviously, he's not the answer. He is an absolute incredible player. And I've said this a lot recently. I think the fact that at 36, in his first season in the Premier League, he's been so incredible, arguably top two in the league this season at center back. Ruben Dias for Manchester City has been unbelievable. But I think the fact that Thiago Silva's done this at this age, his first time ever in the Premier League, there is already no doubt, but he is one of the best center backs of all time. No doubt about it. To be able to do it this quickly, not knowing the language at this age in the most competitive league in the world. Yeah, no doubt about it. Okay, so he's obviously not the answer. Jorginho wouldn't be the answer either, because Jorginho, it's not surprising when he plays well, because if you do tailor the formation to him, if you mask a little bit of his downside, his weaknesses, the fact that, yeah, if he gets too high up the pitch, he obviously can't get back. He doesn't hit the ball really hard, but he will put it in the right place. Tuchel's been really smart about putting Jorginho in a really good situation. I think many people know that. Whether they like Jorginho or not, they kind of know he can be a system-dependent player. But if you find the right system, he can be quality. Absolutely. So I'm not really that surprised with Jorginho. Rudiger, he's been nails. I mean, he's been unbelievable since Tuchel took over. I really did not like Rudiger coming into Tuchel's appointment as a player and as a person. I won't lie. He's been quite disruptive. He's been quite disruptive at Chelsea in the last 12 plus months. And Rudiger's personality is like hit or miss. On one hand, his really aggressive, balls-to-the-wall type attitude can be good for the shithousery side of things, David. Everybody needs that in the team once in a while. You probably saw him when we played Atletico Madrid getting in Suarez's face. I mean, he got in Mario Hermoso's face for Atletico Madrid, the person everybody says is my twin. Like, Rudiger is good at that stuff. But at the same time, it has a negative side, and he can really be a drag around the building. I've heard many times Matt Law, who probably even Serie A fans might know from Twitter just because he's such a big reporter, he gets a lot of stick for reporting on it, but it's still true, but he gets a lot of stick on reporting on it. But anyway, it's also the performances, though. He's been so good. So not only has he bought in as a person with his attitude, with Tuchel's new regime, if you will, even though he did have a fight with Kepa. I'm sure you probably saw that, and many fans probably saw that. He put in a nasty tackle in training about a month ago. I heard it was a tackle that, if it happens in a game, a huge brawl breaks out, like a true brawl. It was a nasty tackle, and it was a true fist fight, and apparently Kepa actually beat him up. But yeah, besides that, which, by the way, you can argue can be a good thing because it got the team ready and back and angry. It was after the one slip up against West Brom. So fair play, Rudiger. And I can't get on you too much because as a left center back, he has been near perfect. So sometimes, David, I don't get too unsure about what I previously thought of them because I think, okay, maybe it's a product of the system. Like what Tuchel has done with Christensen and Rudiger and Zuma when he's in a back three, which is normally not his best spot. And as Piliquita playing every damn game, maybe those guys have been good. Maybe I rate them a little bit more, a little bit less, but it also has been a product of the collective. So I've kind of changed my opinion positively on someone like Christensen, but on Rudiger, I don't know. He's of the age where I don't think like he's developed into this next tier center back, but I think Tuchel has really gotten the best out of him. Maybe it's a German thing, but yeah, Rudiger, absolutely Rudiger. And if you're a Roma fan and you remember Rudiger one of your best players before the ACL injury, maybe this is the Rudiger you remember because he's been unbelievable.
Well, I have to tell you, Roma fans, I saw Marquinhos. It's like, my God, that guy is so good. Yeah. Like, how many good players has Roma? You saw Alisson. We could go on and on and on. Yeah, I have to say, Rudiger does surprise me. I always thought he was, like, a good player, but he seems like a really clutch player. And you're right, the personality thing might be pretty interesting there with him. That extra edge, maybe sometimes, you know, when things are going well, that extra edge, you're like, oh, this is helpful. So good for him there. Interesting. I'm very curious to see if Chelsea can go all the way. It really wouldn't surprise me. I thought Napoli outsider was crazy when he told me that 5-6 weeks ago. And now I totally see what he's saying.
Yeah. Well, I mean, those three guys you just put in that question are going to be crucial, absolutely crucial for Chelsea to get silverware because we know Mason Mount probably is the guy for Chelsea right now. Pulisic's been really nice, but those guys are young. So you need the Silvas, the Rudigers, the Jorginhos, the Azpilicuetas, and so far they've really stepped up to the plate and not that much more to go. So hopefully they can hang on. So speaking of hanging on, David, I've been keeping tabs on the Serie A table, not just because I do this podcast with you, but because I don't know, maybe Chelsea's future could be impacted if Milan all of a sudden don't get a Champions League spot. So I want to ask you, for which team would it be more catastrophic to finish outside of a Champions League spot between Juve and Milan?
Yeah, I've been thinking a ton about this. Look, Inter, we're not only going to, obviously, there are a lot to go back to Champions League. They're going to win Serie A. I feel very good about Atalanta being in the top four. Maybe they don't finish second, but with their form, they're in. Napoli are really surging. They are playing well. I thought at the beginning of the season, Napoli had the third. Maybe you could even talk me into second best squad in Serie A, depending on how you felt about the pieces on Juve's team, maybe being less logical than Napoli. And now they're healthy. They're doing well. So I think Napoli are going to get in, and it's going to come down to Juve and Napoli. And it's really fascinating because you can look at it from a lot of different angles. And the first one with Milan, obviously the players involved. More than Donnarumma not agreeing to the offers that, or more should say Raiola not agreeing to the offers that Milan sent, and there being maybe a big offer from another team. To me, I always thought what could get Donnarumma to leave Milan is not being in the CL this season and feeling that, geez, you know, are we going to be in the CL like really ever? Like I tweeted, and it was an exaggeration, that Donnarumma, you know, could end up being like Handanovic, being this great keeper that never plays in the Champions League until late in his career if he stays at Milan. And look, that is a little bit extreme. He is so young that odds are that wouldn't be the case. But he's got to really wonder with the Champions League, and it's probably a factor in Çalhanoğlu's extension. And maybe with the way Çalhanoğlu's playing recently, maybe that's not such a bad thing if Milan maybe decides to move on from him. Romagnoli's extension next year, and Tomori's redemption. Like, I think that has a lot from the Chelsea angle, it's not just Donnarumma, it's like Tomori. It's like that could have an impact there for sure. And Tomori struggled a little bit recently, but so is everyone on Milan. So when I see a whole team struggling, I don't pick too much on one guy. So look, you know, from a transfer point of view, it would definitely have a big impact on Milan. So it would on Juve. We know Juve has to make a lot in Plusvalenza by June 30th. If you add on top of that, not having the Champions League revenues becomes pretty catastrophic. Look, I've always said it. It's not good. Even if Juve was in an ideal situation, say Juve had won the Scudetto, had a good Champions League run, but they're like, you know what? We want to move on from Ronaldo. He's just not worth the money that we're paying him. Even in an ideal situation, it would have been very hard for Juve to find the taker for Ronaldo. But if they're out of the Champions League, they almost feel like they have to find a solution, and someone's going to have to take a loss on that transfer. So it could have a big issue for Juve there as well. I think it then puts Juve against, really, their back against the wall on guys that can generate plusvalenza are almost all out the doors if they don't make the Champions League. So, you know, it, maybe now you choose one between Dybala and Alexandro, then it probably means both. And then, you know, you got to start thinking about other players. There's no, I doubt they'd even consider moving De Ligt without a Champions League spot. But yeah, it would be pretty bad. But when I think of it long-term, though, and not focusing too much on finances, I do think it's worse for Milan. And here's why. First of all, no team that won the winter championship, so the first part of the season, that one that never then failed to qualify for the Champions League, this would be the first time it happens if Milan does that. And that would be a pretty epic collapse. And I think there is a hangover that goes into the next season with that. And look, Milan hasn't been in the Champions League for a long time. And you're like, oh, okay, this is finally the year. Everything looks great. And it falls apart that way. You're like, geez, are we ever going to get back? When Milan's been doing this badly, it's like a very Adam Sandler movie from the 90s, Waterboy, and there's like a scene where the Waterboy can't play, and then Rob Schneider's like, oh no, we suck again. That's kind of how I feel like Milan fans right now are like, Jesus, are we ever going to get out of this? With Juve, if they don't make the Champions League, I think most fans would look at it, okay, this is a one-off, we'll be back. Yeah, we made a lot of mistakes. A lot of bad decisions just caught up. We'll take the poison pill for 1 year financially, kind of rebuild around Chiesa, De Ligt. Hopefully Kulusevski gets better, and we'll go with that. So I think maybe short-term Juve, but long-term not making the Champions League, I think it's worse for Milan because they really need to get back. You have that 1 year. It's kind of Inter getting back to the Champions League, then allow them to keep players, get better, and Milan absolutely needs that. So I'm going to say Milan. It's close, but I'm going to say Milan. Before we get 2,000 names, I want to give a shout-out to a listener, Tim Princoli, based in Canada. He is turning 21 next week. He's a big fan of the podcast, so I want to wish him a huge happy birthday. Tanti auguri di buon compleanno. Tim is a Juve fan, so it's been a little rough. I hope the opening segment on Tuchel gave you a little bit of hope there. I have to say, Tim, you have a keeper in your girlfriend, Olivia, who contacted me to give you the shout out. So all the best. We really appreciate you supporting the podcast, and I hope you have a great birthday. So now let's get 2,000 names. And again, thank you, Thousand, for getting me the picks in at the last second. I forgot to contact him yesterday. So let's go. Three games. First one, Milan hosting Benevento. Thousand has Milan winning 2-0. Goals by Kier and Kessie. And he says the easy penalties for Milan are returning and they help Father Pioli win. And he says Inzaghi, and that's the one on Benevento, is really facing the relegation race. In Italian, Milan-Benevento 2-0. Kier, Kessie, tornano i rigorini, torna a vincere Padre Pioli. Inzaghi sempre più nel baratro. fidatevi, man. Benevento are struggling. They look like they were comfortably going to avoid relegation. Maybe not so much. Milan absolutely need a win. I'm going to go Milan. They say Ibra's going to play, but I'm going to give a goal to Rebic and one to Bennacer. I'll agree with Milan, 2-0. Next up, oh, this is the game I'm definitely the one I'm excited the most about this weekend. Atalanta traveling to Sassuolo. Thousand has Atalanta winning 3-2. Hat trick by Ilicic, braced by Berardi. He says Muriel's going to miss a penalty. He says Gasperini is going to beat De Zerbi, who has his mind focused on Shakhtar, and Shakhtar are interested in De Zerbi. Ooh, that would be kind of interesting in some ways. And then he says Locatelli is going to get destroyed by Atalanta's midfield. In Italian, Sassuolo, Atalanta 2-3, Berardi, doppietta, Ilicic, tripletta, Muriel sbaglia rigore, Gasperini inguaia De Zerbi con la testa allo Shakhtar, Locatelli fatta a pezzi dal centrocampo della Dea. Atalanta on a run. You guys know I love Sassuolo, but I'm going to agree with Thousand. I'm going to go 2-0 Atalanta, one by Muriel, and I'll give one to Malinowski, who is on fire right now. Last one, Torino-Parma, 3-0. Izzo embraced by Sanabria, and he says Nicola is going to send D'Aversa and B with help from the referee. He says Cairo has made the wire payment and that there's going to be a great party at my friends at Gazzetta dello Sport. Cairo owns that paper. I won't comment on that part. Yeah, Parma are basically relegated. They are talking like a Serie B team. I'm going to have Torino winning 1-0, and I'll give a goal to Zaza, who hasn't been playing that well since Sanabria came on. So thank you, Thousand. And he also gave a birthday present to our listener, Tim, who's a Juve fan. For once, Thousand Names didn't pick Juve to lose. So, Tim, you got that going on for you. Okay, so now let's get to our patrons. We're going to answer some questions for them. If you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. We've had a Napoli outsider. He made a cameo on the Tuesday episode, which is just for patrons. Next week, we have Francesco coming back. We did an awesome podcast, and that one's available to all now if you want to check it out on the Fantasisti in Serie A. Next week, we are going to talk about our favorite keepers in recent Serie A history, and we'll do a draft of them. I think you'll really like it. So if you enjoy Calcioland, consider becoming a patron. So I just realized that it's been way too long since we talked about Atalanta on the podcast. I know we've talked about them on Winners and Losers, some parts of the pod, but we haven't had a guest to talk about Atalanta in quite some while. And you guys know, if you've been listening to the pod for now, that my good friend Mark Doyle, who is based in Italy in Bologna, has become our Atalanta correspondent. He does way more than that, of course. He is the deputy features editor at Gold. He always does a bunch of cool things, not just Serie A related. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, my friend. Bentornato to Calcioland.
Thank you very much. It's great to be back. And I'm looking forward to it because it's always so much fun chatting Atalanta and Serie A in general.
Absolutely. So let's start here. A lot was made of Papu Gomez's departure. I've made a lot of bad calls this season, but one that I'm pretty proud of. And I genuinely felt that Atalanta wasn't going to miss him too much. I think the results have proven that. So how surprised are you at how well Atalanta has managed without not just their captain, but certainly their most iconic player from the past 3-5 years?
Yeah, that's exactly it. You covered it well there. In one way, I suppose I am a bit surprised that it's gone so well, and yet at the same time, I'm not. I remember, we talked about it back in January, I think, about whether they would miss him and how big a blow it was, and we were both kind of the same opinion that at Atalanta, the team is kind of the star. There are not about superstar players and that kind of thing, and I think that's kind of been proven. I mean, as you know yourself, and I haven't spoken to you before about it, you'd be hard-pressed to find a bigger Papu Gomez fan than myself. You know, it's such an extraordinary talent, a great character. as you said, an icon, an absolute symbol of the club, the personification of what Atalanta were doing, you know, that mix of talent and hard work. So I was very sad to see him leave, and especially in those kind of circumstances, you know, where he didn't get the send-off he deserved after giving so much to the club and also to Bergamo in general and the people and the city, you know. So it was unfortunate. It was a kind of bitter end to it. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the team is the star at Atalanta. It's not about, you know, big-name players. It's about the group. It's about a sensible president, true recruitment, an excellent youth system, terrific scouting, Gasperini's footballing philosophy at the end of the day. And also, you know, a great set of players who are willing to buy into all of that. So Atalanta really is about everyone at the club having a common goal and working together to achieve it. And that might sound simplistic, and you know, it might sound very easy to do, but it's not, you know what I mean?
It's really, I totally agree. Yeah.
I mean, if it were, everybody would be doing it. You know, every club would be that well run, you know? So you just have to ask yourself, how many other clubs function that way? How many other clubs could have coped and moved on so seamlessly from the loss of their captain? So in that sense, I'm not really surprised that Atalanta have dealt with Papi's departure so impressively, because the club is built to withstand. It's bigger than one player. It's built to withstand these you know, singular departures.
Yeah, and I think they're about to maybe take it a step further, because look, in quite a few ways, we are seeing a lot of parallels with what happened to Papu with Ilicic. So we are seeing that he's being benched more. Gasperini is not afraid to rib him a little bit in press conferences. There are reports that the two of them aren't getting along great. And look, you know, is it that, to me, what's surprising is that it lasted this long, because I can't imagine two more polar opposites. Like Ilicic, I love him, but he was always known as a lazy player, and he's done well with Gasperini. And look, you know, we saw with Papu Gomez, Pessina's rise. Now we are seeing Malinovsky get back a big role when he didn't have a great first half of the season. On top of that, they also have Miranchuk. So it almost feels like the same thing is happening with Ilicic. Do you agree? And do you think Atalanta is even positioned to, if they were to lose Ilicic in the summer, to continue doing well? I genuinely believe that they can. And it's pretty amazing to think, had you told me this time last year that Papu would be gone and Ilicic would likely be following, I'd be like, oh my God, this guy's falling at Atalanta. But I don't feel that way at all. I actually think they can do just fine even without him. Do you agree?
Yeah, I do. It's a very valid point. I mean, we would have thought Atalanta were falling apart last year if you said, you know, both of these two icons could be out of the club by the end of next season. So, I mean, again, I'd be like yourself. I absolutely adore Ilicic as a player. I give it joy to watch. I love his style. I love the way he addresses the ball. I love what he can do with the ball. Again, I think my regret there with Ilicic is that it was definitely unfortunate that he suffered such kind of personal problems at a time when I thought he was set belatedly to kind of prove himself one of the biggest talents in European football. I to back up what you're saying, actually, a friend of mine, a coach, Danish guy who spent a little bit of time down there at Fiorentina when Ilicic was there. I think it was under Montella, and he saw him training and the attitude. He came back to me saying, "You know, this guy has so much ability, but his attitude just stinks." Essentially, and that's the way he put it. So, I think we always knew he had that talent, but only at Atalanta did they manage to extract it. Did they manage to get the best out of him? And that's why. It was when he was reaching that level, you know, when I think back to Valencia last year, the away leg at Mestalla, and I thought, my God, he's arrived, you know, finally. And this guy could do some serious damage in the remainder of Champions League. So I think it was unfortunate with the time that the personal problems that he had to take some time off, you know, and rightly so, mental health comes first. But it was just the timing was just a pity for the guy and for football fans in general. So I think the hope was always that he would return this season, quickly get back to his best. And he has had some purple patches, no doubt, you know, where he can take the breath. Yeah, you know, where he still retains that ability to take the breath away. But he's 33 now, and I suppose we shouldn't have expected him to remain a guaranteed starter, let's say, in such a high-energy Atalanta team. So I suppose it was inevitable that eventually he'd be rotated a lot more, and that's what we're seeing now. And as you say, I don't think it'd be a massive shock if he were allowed to move on, you know, soon enough.
Yeah. So what do you make about Malinovsky? Because I have to say, I think recently he's playing great. I mentioned the first half of the season, he was kind of getting lost in the shuffle. Like Muriel had become the real super sub, and before they were kind of the co-super subs, but Muriel had kind of taken that. And he's been really excellent. Do you like what he brings to the table? Like Pessina Malinovsky is certainly fairly different than Iličić Papu Gomez, but the results seem to be pretty good. What do you make of that?
Yeah, again, it's a good point. You know, it's not always like for replacements that they're making at Atalanta, but they're bringing in guys that offer something a little bit different, or maybe that are able to offer something more suited to the way they want to play the game. I think Gasparini was quite open about the fact that, you know, Pessina was doing things that Papu was maybe no longer capable of, you know, from a defensive or a pressing perspective, and that was what the team needed, you know, at that given time. So, yeah, I think we're seeing the same thing happen again. And I'm delighted. Yeah, Malinovsky is another player I like. And he's stepping up. Give him credit. He's stepping up at precisely the right time. I think he scored 6 goals in Serie A this season, and 4 of them have arrived in the past 6 games. So he's also contributing assists. He's contributing assists now, too. You know, so he deserves to be playing. He deserves to play, you know, a starting spot. So I think it's great to see. I mean, he brings so much to the table. He's got a hammer of a left foot. He's always a massive threat with a shoot from distance, even set pieces. He's very skillful. And yeah, Iličić, as he maybe fades more into the background, Malinovsky is coming to the fore. And right now, it looks like Malinovsky could be one of Atalanta's main men now as we hit the business end of the season.
Absolutely. So let me ask you this, because I think this is pretty interesting. Because let's go back to, let's say Iličić leaves too. We would have I would have never said it this time last year that both were gone. I probably would have said, I think both are still there. Do you think the strengths that he brings to the table, and obviously there's no manager that I think puts a bigger imprint on his team in Serie A than he does, do you think it outweighs the fact that, look, he does have a pretty difficult personality? You know, he does put the team first. But, you know, obviously guys like Iličić and Papu are great talents. I'm of the opinion that at the club the size of Atalanta, their business model, I actually think Gasperini can get away with alienating stars. I don't think you could do that at a bigger club. Do you agree with that? Do you think kind of the situation work kind of maybe makes his least desirable qualities maybe less of a detractor, if you will?
Yeah, I think this is a fascinating argument. I really do, because I know it's in particular it's something that a lot of Inter fans like to bring up, and maybe other fans of other clubs as well, but in particular because of his history at Inter, that Gasperini functions better at smaller clubs, you know, without, you know, as many high-profile players, that he needs younger guys, you know, more impressionable players to buy into his, you know, his team-first ethos and his, you know, exhausting tactics. So I get that, I definitely think it's not easy to manage egos, you know, to get a dressing room full of stars on your side. I think, you know, on a broader thing, because I think it extends beyond Atalanta. I find it's a fascinating argument in many ways because, you know, look at Zidane at Real Madrid. You know, he's proven himself a master of managing, you know, a dressing room full of Galacticos because he was one himself, you know. And a lot of people don't give Zidane a lot of credit for his tactical moves, you know, tactical acumen. And yet we credit him for managing a dressing room, which seems to be, you know, a very hard thing to do. And then I think of someone like Guardiola, who's considered, you know, the philosopher, the great tactician of our time. And he's had plenty of personality clashes. Obviously, the most famous one was Zlatan at Barcelona. But there's been a lot of high-profile players down through the years.
Yeah.
Kind of slated Pep's management. They've had a go at his personality. They've said he was cold, you know. So I think it's a really interesting debate, and it goes beyond Gasperini, but certainly if you go bring it back to Atalanta, there is a trend developing here. Yeah, it's undeniable. And he wouldn't be the first coach, obviously, to rub characters up a certain way. He does have a particular personality, a particular character. But at the end of the day, let's face it, Gasperini's approach is working wonders at Atalanta and for Atalanta. So if a player doesn't want to follow him, he'll be shown the door. And that seems fair enough to me based on what he's achieved and continues to achieve. You know, the results will always, a coach will always be judged by his results, you know, and not how he gets on with his players. So at the end of the day, he's achieved remarkable results in Bergamo. And for that reason, you have to continue to back him, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that. So couple more things on Atalanta. I have to say one thing that I've changed my mind a little bit in the past. I was like, oh, if Atalanta only had great defenders, they would be such a great team. But I think it's just really their system. I really don't know how much it is the defenders. It's just the philosophy, the way they play. Like, Gasperini had tried to be a little more defensive, Pessina, Papu Gomez. But I actually think the defenders on Atalanta are pretty good. They just play a different style than other teams. So Romero's getting, obviously, a lot of great reviews, and I think he's been excellent. If you had to pick, though, another Atalanta defender that stands out to you that maybe people underrate a little bit, who would it be and why?
Yeah, I agree on Romero. I think he's been a great sign and a real success story for them. The standout at the back, and as you said, he's getting a lot of praise and deservedly so, but the player I probably think that maybe is underappreciated is Chimsiti. I think he's been the second best defender behind Romero this season. I know like match ratings and can be sometimes unreliable, but you look at his average, it's really good. It's around 6.5 or something like that. It's even better than Romero. I think it's also telling that no other Atalanta defender has played more games than him or started more games than him. I think he, like Romero as well, he's been really good in the air for them. I think he's second in terms of, duels won to Romero. So, again, I think he's kind of gone away. It's been very understated. He hasn't got, even the fact that he doesn't make as many crunching tackles. He doesn't pick up as many cards as Romero. He's not as noticeable. He's not a goal scoring defender. But I think he's really had a fine season. And unlike you, they get a bad rep with the Atalanta defenders, I suppose. But they're so often left one-on-one, it's a thankless task. But I think Romero obviously has had a great season, but I think Jim Seavey has done himself really proud this year.
Great shout. I'm glad I didn't mention him when I asked the question, because then people accuse me and the guests of always agreeing. But he would have been my shout. I totally agree. All right, last question on Atalanta. As we're recording, they are in second place, 68 points. Napoli 66, Milan Juve 66. Do you think Atalanta finished second, which means ahead of two teams that tried to shut them out of the Super League? I think they will. I think they are, other than Inter, the one lock. Obviously, Inter's going to win the Scudetto, but Atalanta, for me, are a lock of making them back to the Champions League. That I feel confident about. I feel pretty confident they're going to finish second. Where do you think Atalanta ends up this season?
Yeah, you mentioned the Super League there, and I love the sheer poetry of them beating Juve on the same day that the Super League was announced was fantastic. So I'm undoubtedly, as you can tell by that statement, a little bit biased here. But I think they'll finish second. I agree with you because it's not the hardest rule in the head here. I'm basing it on fixtures and form.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the fixture list here now for all the Italian papers over here are obsessed with the run-in. It's become the big talking point. As you said, the Scudetto is a formality at this stage, but the top four battle is absolutely brilliant, and it's on a nice edge.
Yeah.
Again, I'm looking forward to it. And I'm also looking at the fixtures. And Atalanta here, I don't see an opponent that they're gonna have any fear of. I don't see any reason for them to be afraid of. Like, maximum respect for someone like Sassuolo, who are like Atalanta light, and that's gonna be a tough game for them. And there are tricky fixtures, against teams fighting against relegation, this and that. And they have Milan on the final weekend of the season. But I think Atalanta will relish that. I think they'll relish this position. The one thing, I suppose, is the Coppa Italia final. It could be a distraction. I mean, God, the Coppa Italia that they won in 1963, I think, is their only major, previous major honor. So a lot of energy could be expended there. But the Champions League is huge for Atalanta. That's why they were so obviously, aghast by the Super League plans. But they're on fire again. And I know we've talked about this before. The second half of the season, they seem to be specialists. The season with a flourish. They've lost one game, I think, since the end of January, and even that was last month. It was a really unlucky defeat at Inter. So I definitely finished back them to finish second because they have the form, and I think they have the fixture list to do as well. So if anything, I'd be surprised if they didn't finish second. As you said, they're almost a lock.
Yeah, I agree. So now let's talk a little bit about Serie A. Just a couple of questions there having to do with the top four. I was just going to ask you, who do you think finishes ahead between Juve and Milan? And maybe I'm just going on the assumption you think Napoli is stronger. So let me just ask you, of the three, who do you think is the strongest? And then just between Juve and Milan, who do you think is going to get more points rest of the way?
Again, if you're looking at it rationally, and I think it's the best way to do it always, I think Napoli are the side playing better football at the moment, and I think they have the better fixture list. I mean, I'm looking at their fixtures: the Cagliari, Spezia, Udinese, Fiorentina, Verona. Again, are they going to be afraid of any of those games? I think Napoli are perfectly placed to finish third, at the very least, finishing the top four. As for the question between Milan and Juve, honestly, it's so hard to call, isn't it? Because it's like they're trying to outdo each other in terms of employees.
Yeah.
if I'm looking at it in that regard, I suppose I give Juve the edge at the moment, because I mean, I think back in January when we spoke, you asked me who, when Milan were in the may have been top and were in a really, really good position, and you said who'd pick up more points in the second half of the season, and I kind of thought, well, it's going to be Juve, but now I'm not so sure. I mean, there's so many, we're talking about distractions for Atalanta, you know, and the Coppa Italia is a welcome distraction. You may have nothing but negative distractions. Agnelli's embarrassed himself with his Super League shambles. His position is being called into question. The Suarez case is intensifying, and it's back in the news again today. The directors are under pressure, you know, with people questioning their transfer market business. Ronaldo leaving rumours, you know, they're melting every day because he just looks so unhappy. And this is all before we even get to Andrea Pirlo, who's on the verge of being sacked.
Yeah,
David, it's chaos. I mean, it feels like a perfect storm.
It's like Juve and Inter flip places. You know,
that's exactly it. That's exactly it. It's absolutely bizarre. They just seem to be falling apart at the seams. So, if I'm looking at it, like Juve are the stronger side. I think they have Milan and Inter at home. You know, in their running, but. And Milan still have to go to Bergamo, as I mentioned. But if Milan can somehow kind of arrest this slump, and it has been a pretty bad slump since the turn of the year, if Ibra can start, you know, playing and scoring regularly again, that might be just enough to see them past the Juve club, not even a team, a Juve club that seems to be, you know, intent on self-destruction. So Milan look to me like they're in, you know, they have a sporting crisis, but Juve have an institutional crisis. So I don't even know what's going to happen next there. So I'd be worried. If I were you, then, you know, I'd be worried at the moment.
I think that's a very well said there. Let's just close on this. What do you make of Gattuso? There's, you know, about a month ago, 2 months ago, it felt certain that he was leaving Napoli. Now he's healthy. He's had Osimhen back, who looks really, really good. So let me ask you this. Do you think Napoli should bring back Gattuso, in your opinion? Do you think they will, or do you think it's done that they're going to replace him?
Yeah, that's fascinating. Your questions are quite appropriate, because you were talking about getting some stuff right earlier on, and occasionally I get the odd thing right myself. I did think that Napoli could get back into this season. I did think they could get back into the Serie A top four race when they were struggling, and as you said, when it looked like Gattuso was absolutely finished, and I kind of made it clear in a piece I wrote at the time that, you know, I have so much time for Gattuso. I think he's one of my favorite characters in Serie A. I think I always watch his pre and post match interviews. I think for a guy that used to get mocked over his Italian because of his dialect and because he was Calabrese, but you know, when they would go away on international duty with Italy and Pirlo and the rest of the guys used to make fun of him. I look at him now and I listen and I hear a guy that speaks so eloquently and speaks fantastically.
Yeah,
it's so entertaining. And I think he spoke beautifully and very poignantly about his own medical condition and his struggle with that. I think he's often hilarious in his pressures, like when he. The guy can go from mentioning, you know, Sean Connery to Brad Pitt in the space of 2 seconds, you know. So I find him very humble. I find him very funny. And I also, again, I think if you look at the overall, the bigger picture and his overall tenure, like since he took over, he went into a club that was pretty much at in the midst of a civil war. You know, he went into a difficult situation and a tough environment, and he's had success. You know, and they had it. Unlike you, I think I'm disappointed that maybe that they didn't have a Scudetto challenge this year. I think that it looked like the pieces were in place, but they had injuries, they had problems, and this and that. So that has to be factored into the equation. But he's got them back in an excellent position now. As I've just said, I think they will finish the top four. And if they do, I kind of feel like he deserves another season, whether they give it to him or not. I know the tide is turning. We're hearing more and more rumors that De Laurentiis is happier with him now. That, you know, an accord, a truce could be found at the very least. But I would be fascinated to see Gattuso given another season. I mean, you mentioned Osimhen as well. I think he makes a fantastic difference as well. Gives him such a different option, such a different outlet. So, you know, that was their big signing last summer, let's not forget. And he's only just now kind of, he's had injuries, he's had COVID, he's had all sorts of stuff. He's made mistakes. So I kind of feel like, give Gattuso, one more year and let's see what he does. If he doesn't finish in the top four, I understand his position is probably untenable. And again, if he doesn't challenge for the title next year, I understand that he would probably, you know, he would be sacked. But I'm just kind of thinking, just give him the shot, you know, give him a summer and a season in which we should see something more, you know, something resembling normality and a more conventional campaign. And I think they could do some damage next year. I think they could challenge. So I don't know. I'd love to see him just, you know, stick around because he's such a fan. He's a godsend for a journalist. You know, when you're watching all these great
soundbites.
But I also think let's face it. Let's take a step back and think of what he's achieved since he's arrived in that chaotic situation. I think he's done all right, and I do. I think he merits one more year. I really do.
Well said. I mean, I would say right now, if you ask me who's going to be the biggest challenger to enter next season, I would pick Napoli. They have the best squad and they have the best situation. So, yeah, and that in and of itself says a lot about Gattuso. But, Mark, definitely. I could talk culture with you all day long. You're a philosopher. You have a great accent. You're based in Italy. You have all the things that I like. So, guys, I love having Mark on. Anytime he's on other pods, that's the time you should check out all those other pods. His articles are awesome. He had a great article on Andrea Agnelli Pinto's page. Check it out. I always love reading your stuff, not just on Serie A. And thanks so much for hopping on again, brother. Always a pleasure.
Not a bother. If anything, it gives me a massive ego boost. You're so nice. You're too kind. Thanks very much, David.